today, they're finished.
So there are no unions in the United Kingdom?
Nothing.
What do they do?
I'm not there now. I lived there in 1988.
Mm-hmm. But you don't hear anything about them?
No, I went to a company in Canada that the unions was trying to get in from 1988 till I retired about 10 years ago, and they couldn't get in there because the management pay a good wages. If the managers pay his workers good wages, you don't need unions. Unions are for themselves. That's all.
Okay.
They're not for the workers, you know.
Well,
okay.
It'll be interesting to hear what people in Barbados are saying about the future of the unions. Because the political class seems to place a lot of emphasis on unions.
I know.
Both the Democratic Labour Party has done so over the years. Now the Barbados Labour Party has turned to the unions to give the impression to us that it is vitally important that you have union representation at a particular level.
Well, that's what it looks like here. But the unions were dead for a long time, you know.
Yeah. All right.
Yep. Okay.
Thanks for calling. Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Yes, sir. I'd like you to explain to me what Black Lives Matter is. I can't get that on the stand. Because
Certainly comes out of the hostile relationship that exists between white policemen and black people in the United States. And I think it needs to be seen largely in that context, and the extent to which that same kind of superiority may be displayed by white policemen to black people elsewhere in the world. That is where I see it coming from.
Okay, I understand that part, but what got me concerned, South Africa, especially Chicago, and a lot of places where black people are killing up black people at a very high rate, and you don't really hear nobody talking about it. You don't hear it at all. I don't know. It's shocking. It's shocking. It's shocking to hear these statistics. Chicago, man, it will bring tears to your eyes. I mean, the young people in Chicago, black men are just dropping like flies. And they will not stop. The thing that got me, when a white man kill a black man, you say, oh, they stop, Black Lives Matter. But when blacks kill blacks, you don't hear nobody talk about it. That's the part that got me shocked.
Well, I understand what you're saying, because closer to home, we have a lot of people who are losing their lives in Jamaica and that sort of thing. And this has been going on for quite a number of years.
Yep.
Here in Barbados, we've seen an increase in the number of people who have lost their lives by the gun, and that is all part of what we need to pay attention to, but perhaps we need to call that something else, because many people don't want to hear that discussion in the context of Black Lives Matter, because it's, to me, for them it's important to see the white on black as the issue, but the black on black violence is a different matter. However, let me say to you that there is a link between what is happening in black communities and how the society is structured to disadvantage people to the point where many people are left powerless and hungry and homeless and marginalized. And if you're creating and perpetuating such an environment, then people become angry and rebellious. That's part of what we all have to address, even in a country like this. Because if you tell people that education is the engine of mobility and you have no education, you have no engine. So if you have no engine, what are you likely to do? You're relying now on that person to say, I will accept my lot. You know, and if they're deeply religious, they are likely to do that and say, well, I can't change it, I will accept it. But so many people have moved away from those religious moorings to the point where they get angry and they lash out in one way or another. So part of what I believe needs to happen is that there's got to be that policy direction that helps to give more of those people a feeling as though they are part of it. They need a stake in it. In the same way that people talk about workers needing a stake in a company, the people need a stake in the country. So the question is, how are you going to give them that feeling? Otherwise, that's what they're going to do. They're going to go there and they're going to take out their anger on one another. Because the people that they really want to reach are out of their reach.
Mm-hmm.
So the only people that they have are those who are their neighbors and their friends and, you know, people who are close to them.
I had to go to the police station to complain for the young lady. And sir, to know I ain't getting satisfaction with that. It's disappointing. It's disappointing. Nothing in common with that.
Well, you know,
the lady didn't get warned. Bobby K was the turn, I'd be in trouble. And I don't like that. I don't like that.
Well, those are things that people like you need to be, you know, you need to draw to attention, to the attention of the authorities.
Perhaps you should have written
to them about it.
Listen, I wrote 4 letters. When I hear the letters of the Pansan boy desk, I don't believe in writing letters. You don't get away with that.
Okay.
So I going to hear you on that. Because this is wrong. If I did something to that young lady, I'd be in trouble. So then when you talk to men telling me foolishness, forget about that. That's not right. So it's a whole, I don't know, wrong men. I don't know what's going on there. But this is foolishness. I can't get away from it. She won't leave me alone. She hit me all sorts and stuff. I can't get her on the stand. I don't.
This is a woman you had a relationship with?
No, this is not a woman I had a relationship. We was in supermarket. She was in front of the line and she didn't control. She didn't have enough money, so I just put the rest, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then she tried to take me and tell she I didn't do it, you know, because she has some baby stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I just do it because, you know, I understand. But it's just the one woman left me alone.
I mean, alone. I mean, after you put up the money for the babe, for the groceries and stuff.
Wait, when they talk, she do it. Now when they get to the car park, she was in the car staying. You know,
whose car?
Telling me to, huh?
Whose car was she in?
She was in her car.
Yes.
So when they went now to go on about my business, she tried to stop me and tell me, but and then she tell me thank you. I said okay. And then another time I see she won't leave me alone. And then she found out where it was, and then I couldn't get away from this woman.
So what? She wanted more money.
No, she didn't want more money. She want friendship or something. I don't know.
She was after your body?
Huh?
She was after your body?
She was after my body, man. I bare skin and bone. She not after my body. Like, she just want to be a friend or something. I don't understand. But
so you felt as though she was harassing you?
Thank you very much.
So most people, if you tell men that, you know, is it a woman harassing you? Are you running? That's the kind of response you can give, you know?
That's what I'm trying to tell you. Know, when you tell men, the men got everybody money, got her. David, you could reject anybody, I could reject anybody, so I don't understand that. I don't get that, I understand.
So you don't think that perhaps that is what informed the behavior of the police? Because this is what has happened to men when they make complaints about women's behavior to the police, you know. This has been a traditional situation, so, you know. I don't know to what extent it has changed, but I've heard men complain about that over the years.
But the police would have make a visit. The woman didn't get a visit yet. You should make a visit and say, well, you
but
know.
But how you know?
Because I asked, and the man said, me, they didn't ring. I went back there, and he went to the police, and he told me they didn't ring, because they didn't feel it was that necessary. Take I taking things, two things, but he just needs she left me alone. That's all it is.
So when is the last time you felt harassed by her?
Yesterday morning.
What?
Yeah.
So what did she do yesterday?
Well, it was just at the bus stop in the garage, and she came down, offered me a drop and thing, and she won't leave me alone. I think she got a mental problem, or I don't know where it is.
She offered you the drop. Did you take it?
No, I don't want nothing to do with that woman.
Well, if she did, well, to say that she came down the road and offered you a drop, why would you feel harassed because she is stuck?
Because I told the woman more than once, I just want she to leave me alone. How much time ago I tell her to leave me alone? It's not rocket science.
Okay.
Okay, so you enjoy the rest of your day.
All right, thank you very much. It's an unusual complaint to hear somebody come on the air and actually feel as strongly as you do as a male on something like this. Down to brass tacks, coming back.
Starcom Network and the Department of History and Philosophy, University of the West Indies, Cahill Campus present Today in Bajan History.
Hello. I'm Alan Cobley, Professor of History at the University of the West Indies, Cave Hill Campus. On this day, November 16, 1994, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea came into force for Barbados. The convention has been described as a constitution for the oceans. Under the terms of the convention, Barbados was able to exercise legal jurisdiction over its territorial waters to a distance of 12 nautical miles, and to claim an exclusive economic zone up to 200 miles. The establishment of an exclusive economic zone was especially important for Barbadian fishermen. For example, when the migratory patterns of the flying fish, a favorite Barbadian dish, shifted to the south, it led to frequent disputes over fishing rights between Barbados and Trinidad and Tobago. The issue had inspired a calypso by the mighty Gabby called Flying Fish Diplomacy in 1990. Fortunately, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea provided a mechanism for the arbitration of such disputes. Another mechanism established by the convention allowed Barbados to claim undersea mineral rights on the continental shelf for a distance of up to 350 miles. This has become increasingly important in recent times as the search for new, potentially lucrative sources of oil and other resources has shifted to the waters surrounding the Caribbean archipelago. For centuries, the oceans were governed by the principle of the freedom of the seas. But in our modern world, there was a growing danger that this romantic idea would translate into lawlessness and uncontrolled exploitation of our oceans. Fortunately, the UN Convention on the Law of the Sea, which came into force for Barbados on this day in 1994, has provided the legal framework necessary for the management and protection of our maritime resources. It has also proved to be vital for the development of the blue economy in Barbados.
Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, welcome.
Good afternoon, David. Two points quickly. Mm-hmm. First of all, in reference to the moving of the Larnesan statue, I heard you made mention earlier of the fact that perhaps the most people couldn't care one less or the other, and I totally agree with you. I couldn't care one less if the statues move or not. What does it do for me if it doesn't move or if it doesn't move? Now, I quite understand that the intellectuals may, when they hear people like me say that we are grossly uninformed about our past, our present, and our future. I believe that in a climate like this, when they are pushing to have this statue move, now I heard a reference you mentioned earlier that it was a move because the government at the time did not have the funds to move it. And in a time like this, when so many people need help from the government coffers, I do not see why those people who I believe to be uncaring should be pushing to have this statue moved. It could be moved perhaps at a later time, but you're not going to take the few dollars that you have and waste it on moving a statue that does not influence anybody one way or the other. If they feel good to know that it's moved tomorrow, when today is past, okay, well, they can pound their chest and say, well, the big question is,
once they move it, what are they going to put there instead?
I heard somebody may mention earlier of someone like our late Prime Minister that just passed, Owen Arthur, and I perhaps could be in agreement with that. But I think that the money used to move the statue right now could have been better spent. Secondly, I heard you also made mention of the fact not long ago you read a WhatsApp, I believe, from someone purporting to be living in the United States who equated the Barbados Labour Party here to the Democrats mm-hmm. in the United States of America. Mm-hmm. And it didn't seem to be a very positive comment that the person made because it went on to make some negative comments. And I believe that person should really be ashamed because we have just had the example of the most disgraceful Republican leadership of the United States and perhaps the whole of all time. And I do not understand how they could be trying to pull down the Democrats when Donald J. Trump, even now, having lost the election fairly and squarely, according to even some of his Republican leaders, refused to compliment Joe Biden on his win. So I don't understand how the person could be talking negatively about the Democrats when they have a Republican leader that is perhaps, as I said, the worst that they ever had. So I think they need to go back.
But you know, the very fact that he has been able to get so much support suggests that there are quite a lot of people who do not share your view.
But David, I'll tell you this. Donald Trump is saying some things that people, especially the right-wing people in America and the white people in America, want to hear. When Donald Trump talks about, and when he does not condemn the fact that people of other groups, except the white elitist group in America, when he does not condemn what happens to other people, this is what the white elitists in America want to hear.
I want to suggest to you that for quite some time, leading up to this last election, there were people who said, and I would have been among those, who listened to the pollsters and stuff, who said that Donald Trump was not widening his base, that he was stuck at 45, no more than 43-45%. You realize that in real terms, that's not true. So that you have so many people who believe, one, that Donald Trump delivered on the promises that he made. You see, he wanted to build a wall, he sought to build a wall. Taxes, he promised to deal with taxes in a particular way, he delivered on that. He said, America first, we are going to retreat from doing all of this stuff for other people and look after ourselves. He did that. He said that he was not supportive of abortion, and therefore he didn't support it. He said he was going to put more conservative judges on the benches, and he did that. So those people say, but he is indeed, he's not your traditional politician, and that's why we're going to accept the bad behavior that comes from him. But what matters more to us is policy. And we can see from him that he did follow policies that they supported.
Policy talk, David.
No, he actually delivered on some of those policies.
He built the wall, David.
But the wall is not the only thing. The taxes, he delivered on that.
And he has promised to make the people, everybody in America, pay taxes. But Joe Biden, from what I heard, is trying to make the richer people pay the taxes so that the onus can be on those who are able to pay. Donald Trump wanted everybody to pay higher taxes. Donald Trump got in with a philosophy, and from the day he got in, everything Obama did was wrong. He's going to wipe out everything Obama did. And I do not understand.
Yeah, but all I'm saying to you is you don't have to agree with his position. What you have to recognize is that there is more than one perspective on his leadership.
I agree.
And he could never have garnered so many votes. This is a record number outstripped only by the fact that Joe Biden got more.
David, his base, what he came in promising people, he has a base that said what people, a lot of white people out there wanted to hear. And so I don't care what Donald Trump did.
So how do you explain that he's been able to widen, increase his black base as well, and the Latino base?
And that's shocking and surprising.
How do you rationalize it? Because you see it only in white terms.
He's telling people that, okay, he's going to do this, doing that, and then he's not really fulfilling the majority of promises. He has a lot of big talk.
The church people, the evangelicals won't tell you that, though, whether they're black or white.
He's helping them.
Okay, we got to move on. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Stacks. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. You on the air?
Mr. Ellis?
Yes, sir.
No. These people that crossing the floor or whatever, is it now the norm that if you want to contribute to country that you must join a party?
Well, you tell me what you think.
No, it seems so.
By the same token, we are in a country that says if you really want to contribute to country, you have to be in parliament.
Yeah, but the two of those won't be in parliament. But if
that's the next step. They vied for that before.
Because when I read the comments, it would suggest that they have these ideas, and their ideas would have meshed with policies that they're seeing, and therefore, so why they can stay outside of a party line and just contribute? So can a person who is not connected contribute?
Well, if you follow the reasoning that we had recently, it implies that you are not going to be able to make a stronger contribution unless you belong to certain institutions. If you don't belong to that institution, you are basically an outsider and you will not be taken seriously. That is one of the interpretations that can come from the argument that has been made, that the next logical step for anybody to take is that you either have to enter a party, you then have to enter parliament, and notwithstanding all that has been said about non-governmental organizations and that sort of thing, nothing in Barbados is more important than being at that level, because you are supposed to have a place at the table where decisions are being made. And if you are not there at that table, well, dog eat your supper. That's one interpretation that you can give to what has been said.
But isn't that sad? Let's say you have a person who has all the skills and competencies that can help move forward anything. So his view is only good if he aligns himself to a particular base.
Well, look, you got to look at that this way. I have been wrong to hear discussions about broadening this democracy. I have been wrong to hear people talk about the use of select committees of parliament. Indeed, we have seen the government set about using some of these approaches in trying to develop legislation and that sort of thing, so that you don't want to just limit yourself to the people who are elected when it comes to getting ideas. We've seen all of that play out, but to me, it comes across as being somewhat contradictory to make that argument on the one hand, and then on the other, to justify what you want to achieve in this particular instance. You then come and say, well, if you are not a member of a political party, then you are disadvantaged. To me, you can't have it both ways. I mean, that is blatantly clear to all of us. I mean, you can just understand, though, again, you're dealing with politics. And politicians are adept at trying to find arguments to support the particular position that they hold at a given point in time. Another time, another circumstance, they will find the alternative argument and push it. So it is whatever you can use to win the confidence of people and to get their support. I want to thank you very much for participating in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks, and thanks to you, John Stout, technical operator and producer. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.